The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show.
Hey everyone, welcome to the show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks to my friend Doug Hughes for sitting in last week, and with the help of Jim Inman Jr., who's also with me today. As you know, traveling to a destination wedding is not easy, especially when you are the officiant, which I was. But once it was over, as Jim knows, doing this, it's over, and you can relax a little bit. So we stayed one extra day, came home, and getting a good show lined up for you guys today prior to the Labor Day weekend. So Labor Day is here. My family's going to take a little trip to visit a niece and then get back here on Sunday and maybe enjoy Monday if the weather's nice. And then summer is, I guess, officially over at that point, although I'm not going to fold my tent on it quite yet. There's still a lot of good things to happen between now and fall time. Jim, you have big plans for this weekend?
Nothing, and that's quite all right with me. It's very nice. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Sometimes that's the best time, just to hang around and nothing to do.
Yeah.
And which is unusual in my life, but whenever I get that opportunity, I usually think, okay, I have to be doing something. Like, there's someone needing me somewhere at this time. But, you know, sometimes we'll head out to the lake and enjoy that as well.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to get Hot Rod on the phone here in just a second, get a little update on what's been going on in the markets, what we see now, and where we stand on a few things. Of course, we're going to talk to you about our sponsors here. Let me get the cards. Lance Like, the Like Law Group. Give yourself and your family the peace of mind that comes with proper estate planning. Call Lance at 812-323-8300. Kenny Bland Auctions. I've not talked to Dirk for a while, but they are your full-service auction service. They offer the pre-planning, the sale of your estate or real estate. Visit them online at KennyBlandAuctions.com. And finally, Unrivaled Electric. They're your full-service electrical contractor, specializing in generators and solar arrays. Veteran-owned, Unrivaled Electric. They want to be your electrician like they are mine. 812-361-3604. Or you can find them on Facebook or just Google them and they'll pop right up. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's get a little market update from Hot Rod. Of course, we have all this weather in the news right now. I just escaped it to South Carolina, is where we were for the wedding, and we got it out, what, one day prior to the good weather coming in. But it was funny, the South Carolina people, they were kind of like, bring it on.
Really?
Oh, yeah. They were like, they almost couldn't wait. It was the ones I talked to, either they're crazy or they just like the challenge of buckling down for a Category 2.
I had a young man working for me. His parents lived in Florida, and they were preparing for a hurricane. He said, we just dropped the doors. So what does that mean? I don't understand. He said, oh, the sides of their house all have these like metal garage doors that come down and cover the windows and everything like a garage door does.
Hmm.
And he said, we just barricade. Like, I've never experienced such a thing.
Yeah, well.
But, hey, if you can do it.
If you can do it, do it. I went. So one time we were in Florida at Orlando at Disney World and Universal, and the remnants of a hurricane was coming through, and they shut everything down, and you know, it wasn't that big of a deal, but then it was actually kind of cool to be there. And then once the hurricane passed through, which it passes through fairly quickly, they opened up the parks and people came back in, and it was empty. It was one of these weird things that we've never experienced, an empty Disney World.
Yeah.
But you'd think you'd love that, but actually it's kind of weird. Not everything was open. I think there's a happy medium there where you want enough people to feel like you're somewhere, but not too many people where you're miserable.
Exactly.
Which I've been miserable there many times before. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get right on the phone. This is Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. We're going to do a little market update with Rod, and then we have some more questions and answers to kind of fill in the gaps for the remainder of the show, and that's why Jim is here. He's going to pose the questions, and I'll make an attempt to answer them the best I can. Rod, you and I have not been around each other for the last few days. I was at the destination wedding for Angela's daughter, so we haven't really spoke since the end of last week. You know, keeping an eye on things, obviously, when I'm gone, it's just part of our nature. But, you know, the market had kind of a cruddy month, I mean, as far as that goes. But, you know, things seem to be somewhat stabilizing right now. And I know the Fed's really important as far as how they're engaging and communicating, which I think they're doing a fantastic job. I mean, you and I have been at this a long time, and we've had Feds that kept everything close to the vest. We had Feds that were trying to be, you know, over-transparent. I feel like this Fed has done a really good job of maintaining a good amount of transparency. Their wording has been very cautious at times, but at the same time, they're holding close to the vest, maybe a few things that they maybe should hold close to the vest. So here we are today on things, Rod, with September just around the corner. Labor Day weekend is upon us, and we're in the final stretch here as we head into the final stretch of the third quarter. And fourth quarter will be here in the end of the year before you know it. So where do we stand on things right now?
Yeah, so as you said, number one, August, September, October, by calendar, three worst months historically, September being the worst. So we're getting ready to flip the calendar and hit that particular month. Yeah, August was down, I think, for the S&P and maybe the NASDAQ, worst month we've seen since December of last year, maybe it was. It had been a while. But once again, you've had a heck of a rally this year. And while we haven't necessarily fully trusted the rally from the fundamental aspect of it, regardless, good fundamentals, average fundamentals, weak fundamentals, you still had a heck of a rally through yesterday's close, which I guess by the time this airs, it'll have been 2 days ago, Tuesday's close, S&P up over 17% year-to-date, NASDAQ up over 33% year-to-date. That's after giving some back in the month of August because we were around 35% on the NASDAQ and around 20 or a little over on the S&P 500. So to give a little back, that's okay. You know, I think part of the reason the market's giving it back, the market has been under this false assumption that the Fed would potentially be cutting rates by the end of this year. Well, now with the probability of slightly over 50% that there is at least one more 25 basis point increase, probably in the November meeting as opposed to the end of September meeting, well, then it's highly unlikely if they raise rates in November, they're going to turn around and cut them in December. And what I've been saying on Glass's show ever since the market has locked in on this thought of a rate cut before the end of the year is, if the Fed's cutting rates by the end of this year, something horribly wrong in the economy is going on. I mean, the Fed doesn't just cut rates to cut rates. They cut rates to stimulate growth and to stimulate the economy. And I think this is another thing I've talked a lot about on Glass's show, and I brought it up a couple of times on your shows. I don't know what the numbers are, what the percent is, but there's a large number of traders that have never actually been active in portfolio management with a non-engaged Fed. And I mean non-engaged to the degree that they've become engaged in the 2000s. So yeah, the Fed's been around a while. Yes, they cut rates, they raised rates. They didn't have quantitative easing previously, therefore they didn't have quantitative tightening. And at least in my lifetime of tracking it, I don't recall us ever being at zero on a federal funds rate. So we've gone down. So I think there are a lot of investors who think that the Fed cuts rates, boom, that just stimulates equities and off they go because it's better to buy growth stocks with cheap interest rates because it's more cost effective for them to pursue growth opportunities and capital is cheap. But what they don't take into account into that is that, yes, maybe that eventually is what comes out of cutting rates. The reason rates get cut is because things need stimulated and things aren't going very well. So what we would really prefer to see is the Fed settle in at a neutral rate, which is an arbitrary term. There isn't a definitive, this is neutral, but they'll do their calculations and they assess where they think neutral is. That's really where you want to be, that your economy doesn't need propped up by the Fed. It doesn't need slowed down by the Fed. That everything just continues to work and inflation is running at a reasonable pace, so people get cost of living adjustments. That spending is going on in the housing market and in the auto market, and people can afford their needs items at the grocery store and those types of things. That's the sweet spot. Not having Fed funds rate all the way down at 0 or 1 or 2%. Historically, the 10-year Treasury has traded in between 4 and 5%. And here we are in the low fours at 10, acting like this is an extremely high interest rate on a 10-year Treasury. It is not historically. It's recency bias that causes people to feel that way, because we haven't seen these types of rates in quite a while. But quite a while is talking 15, 20 years, not 50 years, 75 years, or 100 years.
It's funny when you hear people complain about a 7 or 7.5% or maybe even close to 8% mortgage rate. Some of the older folks around that were buying houses in the early 80s say, oh, come on, you wussies. This is nothing. This is cheap, still cheap money. So you're right, Rod. Keeping things in perspective is really important. But, whenever it happens kind of in a shock and awe format where it was bang, here it was, and then just kept piling on, that's probably the shock of it all. One of the articles I just picked up on, the benefits of owning stocks over bonds keep shrinking. I learned this a long time ago, way back in my Charles J. Gibbons days, prior to attending the School of Business at IU, but that was when interest rates get to a certain point, people will say, investors will say, you know what, I'll take that bet over having more risk on in the stock market. You know, we used to look at the 10-year Treasury and how it related to the S&P 500 dividends, and when it was, below it or above it, it seemed to have some bearing on which direction the market would go. But interest rates do matter when it comes to stock investing and when you decide to put money to work. Because if you said, hey, you know what, I can buy something paying you 5.5% or 6%, and that's good for the next 7 to 10 years, versus being in the S&P 500, it's a little bit overvalued, arguably the dividend rate's around 2. What do you want? Well, the right answer is have both. But what do you want to do? Well, we'll definitely tilt people towards the bond side of the world where they get a more contractual outcome rather than a hopeful outcome. And 10 years, I think that's a good time frame when you're investing. Don't try to outsmart the market over the next couple of years. I think a lot of people are pretty darn happy buying 5, 5.5 treasuries right now that are under 2 years. But the benefits of owning stocks over bonds, that does keep shrinking as interest rates go up.
Yeah, most certainly does. And there's no doubt there's a draw to it. But I think what people really need to begin to assess when they are analyzing whether or not they make that move for themselves is how to analyze real returns. You have to take into account inflation. So while 5% for the next 7 years sounds great on the surface, we still have inflation north of 3. So your real return is actually more like 2. Within that 7 years, the yield on the S&P is far lower, and no doubt there is a different degree of risk. So this isn't an automatic, stick with stocks no matter what. But you should expect appreciation over those next 7 years, in addition to that 2%. So your real return when you start getting out to 7, 10, 15, and beyond years should be more powerful within that equity side of things. But really it comes down to what do you need the money for? What's the time horizon? What's your personal risk tolerance? So, by all means, if you need the money in a shorter time horizon, don't play the game of exposing it to the equity market, especially at these higher valuations that we see right now. They're not outrageous, but they're most certainly not low to where you would call the market cheap by any means. So don't just automatically fall for the plain and simple five looks great and I'll lock that in for a while. That's part of the other problem. Right now, it's easy to lock in 5 and above 2 years and under. It's not so easy to lock in 5 and above once you start getting beyond that. Remember, the yield curve is inverted right now, so the 10-year's right around 4.2 or so, and the 2-year just ticked back under 5 to like 4.90. So it is a little more difficult to go out longer and find that north of 5. You're still getting right around 5 and a little over on some of the corporates. But once again, to get that higher yield, you're dropping down in risk as well. And as you and I know, and the financial crisis showed us, even some bonds that are investment grade before turbulence potentially hits their sector can fall on hard times and end up getting in trouble, even though they started out as an investment grade rating. And I think to the point that you made about the ascent of the interest rates, that's most certainly what is causing some turmoil within the banking sector. The big boys, not so much, but that's where the fear in the regionals and the local banks is at. That's why Fitch had come out and did their downgrade of certain banks within that category, because they really had no time to prepare their portfolio for the rapid rise in interest rates. So they were forced to hold extra capital because of 08, so we're going to make you hold more, and they go out and they buy a whole bunch of safe treasuries yielding next to nothing and lock them in for 10 years, and then the Fed goes and raises rates from zero to over 5 in a short amount of time. Now all of a sudden that portfolio of their reserves looks really, really bad as the price today, but you know you're going to get your money back in 10 years if you can wait until 10 years for that maturity.
Real quick, and we'll let you go. Obviously a lot of weather down in Florida. Even over on the West Coast there, about where I was in South Carolina, obviously that always has some short-term economic impacts, whether it be oil or whatever. We've had, some writer strikes out in Los Angeles. We've had, a variety of things, and we have jobs reports coming up this week. It's a little difficult because people do get a little worked up over the natural disasters, and we've been around for many of them. That some are absolutely horrific, and they tend to be short term as far as their impact on the market and the economy. We don't really see any difference in that, do we, Rod?
No, not really. Typically, the bulk of what comes out of those natural disasters is human problems and issues and things that need addressed. Sometimes you'll get a little spike in a Home Depot and a Lowe's because people are going to have to go out and rebuild what gets destroyed in that. So you get a little short-term pop with some traders in that. But once again, it's not long-term revenue that's sticky for those types of companies. So, yeah, not a whole lot going off of that. From a strike perspective, most certainly in the entertainment world, I don't think that will have much of an impact on the market. The strikes that could impact the market would be more related to the UAW, especially as it was connected to UPS. That one got resolved because most certainly if a large logistical company like UPS goes on strike and stops moving products around the country, that creates a big issue, especially in the environment we're in which we have higher inflation that we want and we're trying to fight it. And if we can't get goods from point A to point B, well, that only adds inflationary pressure to what we're already dealing with.
All right, Rod Holloway, folks, listen to him on Friday on Glass in the Afternoon as we head into the holiday weekend. And, Rod, I guess you'll be off on Monday like the rest of us, and we'll be back at the ranch hitting it hard on Tuesday.
That sounds good, Dave. Have a great show.
All right, man. We'll be back, guys. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to jump into some Q&As that Jimmy was able to dig up and get from various programs we're part of. And we're going to do some we think will relate to you. We'll be right back at Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Your Money with David Hayes. Jim Inman Jr. is hanging out with me today. Helped kind of prepare today's show as we, you know, it's funny because whether it was getting guests for the program or trying to coordinate questions and answers, that pretty much was all on me, which means that I had to contact the guest. I had to get someone to coordinate with their handler. I mean, it was, and then sometimes it just fell apart. So it went through a period of time where I kept promising I was going to have some great guests, and I would have occasional great guests on, my standbys like Ed Slott and others. But, you know, having Jim kind of help me bird dog those now is a great thing, including putting these Q&As together. So, Jimmy, start at the top.
All righty, sir. This one first comes from Dan. Dan's got a question. Client has an individual brokerage account with stocks and a bond in it. He was thinking about taking out the cash, the client was, in the account, $8,000, and wanted to know any tax implications.
No. I mean, I get that question a lot, which is kind of interesting. Money that comes out of an IRA or a 401k that you've never paid the tax on, then you have to pay the tax. If you had to sell something like a stock or a bond and take a gain or maybe a loss, then that could be a reportable event. But when you just take cash from your account that's already accumulated, you've already paid tax on that, there is no tax on that whatsoever. You'll get a 1099 INT DIV at the end of the year, at the beginning, the end of January, I would say. And it'll tell you how much interest in dividends or capital gains you had to pay tax, you need to pay tax on, but the distributions are not taxable. Pretty common question, believe it or not.
Well, this one, second one is also a common one, but I got a good example here for it. How do I pay the taxes when I do a Roth conversion? This comes from Ken.
Well, you have to out of your pocket, I guess. I mean, so there's a couple ways. I mean, one, when you do, well, first you have to ask yourself two questions. Number one, how old am I? And do I have the cash otherwise to pay it that's not in my IRA? So how old am I? Why is that important? Well, if you're over 59 and a half and you did a Roth conversion, you can withhold the tax on the conversion. So let's say you had a $20,000 conversion. You said, I want 15% withheld in tax, or about $3,000. It gets withheld in tax. The 17 goes into the Roth. The $3,000 goes to the government, and that's how you paid your tax. Now, ideally, you would rather pay it with outside money because that's more money in the Roth growing tax-free. So that ideally is the way to go. If you're under 59 and a half, you have to pay it with outside funds, because if you have it withheld, then that's deemed a early distribution, which kind of stinks to think, okay, if I have, you know, taxes withheld, that was $3,000 that I took out, sent to the IRS, and I have to pay a 10% penalty on that. Well, yeah, you do, actually. So you can still do it if you want, but there's an additional 10% penalty that you would have to pay. So that's not a smart way to do it. What I like is, if you don't have the money in a bank account to pay it, and if you do a Roth conversion, make your estimated tax payments then, if you need to make one. Look at your tax return. Did you get a $5,000 refund last year and you anticipate the same? Well, use that money to pay the Roth conversion, the tax on the conversion. So in my earlier example, if I converted 20, you don't have to send them anything. That's just $3,000 less you'll get back at the end of the year. So understand what age you are. If you're over 59 and a half, you can have it withheld. Not the greatest idea. If you're under 59 and a half, you need to pay it without a pocket money. Another technique that I've talked about on the show, do the conversion early in the year if you can, and then go to your employer and say, hey, can you crank up my tax withholdings? And then you can just pay more as you go every week, put enough in the coffers to pay the taxes on the Roth conversion, and you go on from there. Great question. Happen all of the time. How do I come up with the money? Where do I come up with the money? I did an entire podcast on this on the 2025, the final drive, and I think you should listen to it.
Next question is from Rex, continuing on the IRA discussion. Can I do a Roth IRA conversion within my retirement plan?
Yeah, so that would be a 401k or 403b. We call them in-plan conversions. The answer is yes. It's completely out there and legit to do. The question is, does your plan allow it? Not every plan allows it. Most plans do. Most big plans now allow it, but a lot of smaller plans don't. So you have to contact your provider and say, can I do a Roth conversion within the plan? If you can make Roth contributions, which most of you can, almost everyone can now, then you could probably do a Roth conversion. But like I said, not always. I know there's some plans here locally that didn't add that because it costs money to amend the plan. They decided not to add it. When they made a survey of people, how many people would likely do one, well, an uneducated group of people answering that question said, I doubt I would do that, or very few people even answered the question. It's interesting, when they send out surveys like that, it's almost like voting. Like 16% of people in Monroe County were eligible voters, just small turnouts. When you do surveys like that as an employer, you want to pull your hair out because no one ever responds. But I can tell you right now that, yes, you should have a Roth conversion option inside your plan, and people should be looking at that, making sure you're eating up your 12% bracket, maybe your 22 or 24% bracket. Do as much as you can before you retire and get on Medicare, because that's less money that you'll be forced to take out or have to take out. Your Medicare premiums might be higher. So there's a whole bunch of stuff around that. And yeah, does it sound confusing? Absolutely, it is confusing. There's a lot of gotchas out there, and that's why in one area, it's like, okay, this is an area that a brother probably should need some help in. I mean, you can try to do it yourself if you're a savvy tax person, but when you start adding in excess Medicare premiums or net investment surtax charges or whatever it might be that could get you by having extra income or maybe blowing through a particular portion of your bracket. But keep in mind, this year has been a great year with inflation. It expanded the brackets out, made the 22 even wider. The 24, there's a lot of money to be converted there, even the 12. You'd be surprised how many people are in the 12% bracket. And again, it's the next dollar you get taxed on. So even if you taxed yourself just a little over the 12 into the 22, it's just the next dollar that gets taxed at 22, not the entire thing. So it's a long answer to Rex's question on can I do a conversion within my retirement plan. But bottom line is, yes, it just depends on your plan.
One last IRA question here, and this one I think is a quick one. If I take money out of an inherited IRA, can I roll it back into the account?
A good question, because this actually came up. This is out of our office, that someone needed some money, knew they could take it out of an inherited IRA with no penalty. They're under the 59.5, which is true. So they took like $10,000 or $20,000 out. Then they had money come from a sale of some real estate, and they wanted to put it back in. Well, unfortunately, inherited IRAs are different. Once it's out, it's out. You cannot put the money back.
There you go.
Better take a break, Jimmy.
Sounds good.
When we come back, we got a school teacher that's been at it for 31 years and clawing to get out, it sounds like. We'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Labor Day weekend's upon us. Hope everyone's having a good one. You're listening to this either on Thursday night prior to Labor Day or on Saturday morning, or potentially just in your car listening to it on the podcast as you're driving into work or whatever time you like to listen to podcasts. In my car, I have Apple Play, I think it's called, in my car.
Yep.
And when I go get in my vehicle, if a new podcast has been put up, which this radio show goes into a podcast after the Thursday night airing, it just pops up. There it is. And I'll have to just press it and play it. And it's pretty cool. So even someone like me, who's pretty inept when it comes to technology, can press a button.
We weren't talking about that 20 years ago when this show was first starting off.
No, we actually had cassette. Remember that cassette tape?
Yes, we do. I found a few when I moved back into the office.
Oh, geez. I know. They're still out there. And then Joe Smith, we'd borrow his recorder.
Yep.
And we would press record while we're in, because there was no way to record the show from the board.
Right.
So we had to record it for compliance purposes and just, you know, make sure and hope that it recorded.
I knew I was old when I had a Bloomington North intern. I had to explain how to operate a cassette player and how to flip it over in deck A and deck B. I'm like, oh, buddy, oh man, I'm old.
The old mixtapes of the
exactly.
80s, right?
You got it. All right. So, talking about school, we have a question from a 53-year-old school teacher who has 31 years of service. She wants to know what happens if she leaves her position as a teacher to go do another career that's completely different, not associated with public service, teaching, anything like that.
You know, I first looked at this, I thought, 53 years old with 31 years of service? When did they start at, like, 12? And I'm, oh, no, I got the math right here. Because I'm 53 with 30 years of service, I guess. So I'm like, okay, that just looks old. Yeah. So anyway, it is what it is.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, this is the school system here in Monroe County and pretty much throughout the state work the same way. And, of course, Ryan and Wayne have been on the show. They're the advisors for the Monroe County school system and Monroe County government. So this is something that's looked at all of the time. So here's the way it works. There's a couple different rules that you have to follow. The one that a lot of folks focus on is the rule of 85, and that is your years of service plus your age. And if those two equal 85, then you can retire with full benefits. So in this case, this person would be 84. So, or 84 when you add up the two. Is that right, Jim?
You got it.
Got it.
One more year.
One more year, they become eligible to retire with full benefits. So it would be, you know, that would be it.
Okay.
Now, wait, there's more.
That's right. I was getting ready to lead to.
There's more. If you don't have meet the rule of 85, but you're age 65 with at least 10 years of credible service, you can retire with full benefits. Age 60 with 15 years of credible service, or the rule of 85. Now, what do full benefits mean? It means full pension benefits. You're still going to have to deal with health insurance. A lot of them have a VEBA, a voluntary employee benefit agreement, that they have set money aside that they can use to pay for their health insurance, let's say between age 60 and 65, and they typically don't have enough to get them there. But it's helpful. And then you go on Medicare after that. But do you take the average of your last five, highest five, and you divide that to come up with an average income times 1.1% times your years of service, and that's your full benefit right there. It's super easy. Used to be the state wasn't as communicative as they are now. They send out great statements telling you exactly how many years of service you have. And check your years of service. They might have it wrong. You know, you might have had some service somewhere else they didn't pick up on that you could include in there as well. So, anyway, that's how it works.
All right. Question from Chris. He just started a new job. He's looking to get connected with the Human Resources Department as an employer at his employer to talk about his withholdings. So before he goes in, are there any criteria that he should think about, consider, any questions in particular that he should ask at this meeting?
You know, this one's actually pretty simple because most of the time you go in and you fill out the W-9 and you just simply say, are you married? How many allowances do you want? Typically, that's not exactly this way, but let's say you have three kids. Maybe you put that down, you know, and then you go with it. If you're putting money away into your retirement account, I hope you're not putting it away into the tax-deferred side, the taxable side through the Roth, and then never pay it again. That's not going to have effect on your bottom line. But usually the human resource people are pretty good with this. But it does make me remind me of something, going back to the teacher. So when they go to fill out the tax forms for the pension, and they do fill it out like they've always filled it out through work, you know, I'm married and this many exemptions and allowances and all that, the state will assume that's the only money you're making. So they will grossly underwithhold for your pension because they didn't consider money coming out of your IRA. They didn't consider Social Security taxes or taxation on Social Security. So you really have to take a look at all of your income. You might still fill it out married with zero allowances or whatever, but then there's an additional number that you can plug in to say, yes, withhold this extra for the Fed and the state, and then you'll be not surprised when it comes to tax time because that happens a lot where people are like, oh, my gosh, I owe $5,000, $7,000, and I don't understand why. Well, look how much is being withheld from your state pension. It's like nothing. That's because they're assuming this is all the income you have. And if that's the case, then you're going to be practically in a 0% tax bracket, and that's why it happens. So good question from Chris, but it did make me think about the folks that get a pension and how they look at those taxes. Now, let's skip over the Secure yep. Act one because that one we've talked about that with Ed a couple weeks ago.
So I'm going to go to Diane's question here. This came from one of the workshops that you recently did a couple weeks ago at Ivy Tech. So Diane's planning to retire in a couple of years. She's lived here in the United States all of her life, but she is looking to move to South America to be closer to her family. So she is kind of curious how that international move is going to impact her investment accounts, her estate plan, and really everything financially for her.
Well, just being in South America not long ago, your dollar will buy you more, so that's a good thing. And there's two different exchange rates down there, the published exchange rate, and then the black market exchange rate.
Really?
And it's vastly different. I'm gonna get this wrong. Let's say it's 300-1 published in the black market. When you're dealing one-on-one with people at restaurants or in the flea markets, it's like almost double that.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so just know that, number one.
Wow.
Make sure that you have all your shots, too, because when I went to Brazil in Manaus with my dad back in 19, I had to get a measles vaccination or a booster, whatever. I had to get yellow fever, typhoid fever. So there's shots you might have to have as well. So those are non-financial things. But anyway, I'm not an expert in this area, but I would tell you that, you know, besides, I would check with like the U.S. Embassy and say, hey, this is my question, because they deal with this stuff all the time. You know, and as far as estate planning go and taxes, you're still going to have to pay taxes in the States. By leaving the U.S., that does not exempt you from paying taxes, you know, unless you gave up your citizenship, which don't do that. I mean, you may eventually become a dual citizen potentially down there, and there might be some benefits for that. As far as Social Security goes, you know, that's another one. If you're already taking it, you're going to continue to get it. That's not an issue, just like anything else. But you do have to, you know, you're going to have to maintain these accounts because there are no IRAs in South America. I mean, that doesn't exist. So you can't roll a U.S.-based, you know, IRA to something down there. That doesn't work. You'd have to take it out, pay the tax, and convert it to their currency. But they do like the greenbacks down there, so don't sweat it when it comes to that. So, yeah, there's some good websites out there. that'll help you navigate this. Like I said, I'm no expert in this area, but we have had people move to different parts of the world, and I know that there are some tax benefits for that. It doesn't allow you to eliminate paying U.S. tax altogether.
One thing I did not know as I was researching this question is that Medicare does not cover health care overseas. So if you are on that and you are traveling, you better have a backup plan if something happens to you. Had no idea.
Yeah, and some of the supplements, like again, Josh at the Norris, he's our Medicare guru, but there used to be the supplement plans that would have like an F plan for foreign travel. So again, if you're already on Medicare and you plan to do this, like Diane may be doing, definitely figure out like how your health insurance works. Does the supplement you have, does that help you? I don't know, because again, I'm not an expert in that area, because it's not as common. I mean, if this was very common that people were always leaving and going different places, then I would definitely brush up on it and try to become somewhat of an expert. But definitely is something that would you have to pay attention to your investments, your estate plan, and exchange rates and shots and visas and everything else.
Absolutely.
Should we take another break, Jim?
Let's do it, sir.
All right, we'll be right back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. Hey, if you have a question out there, you know, just something you're struggling, and you're Googling it, and you're getting conflicting answers, or you ask this person, or you ask that person, and you just need to know the answer, the correct answer, and you'd like for us to answer it for you, feel free to email us at cfci.us. Just contact us. That email will actually, I believe, go to Jim, and then Jim will distribute that to the appropriate person in the office. We will get you an answer pretty quickly, and then we may use it on the show as we're going to try to have more of these Q&A shows. Because, you know, if you have that question, like the question on the school teacher, that's a pretty darn common question. How does it really work? The questions on taxation on or how to pay taxes on a Roth conversion, very common questions. So, again, if you have those kind of questions, I'm sure other people do as well. And they
seem
to be
pretty
valuable.
You can even give me a fake name. That's fine, too.
Yeah, you don't have to use your name. Everyone thinks they know who you're talking. I mean, it's like funny because I'll say something on the show, and I'm using real life situations a lot. So someone might say to me, "Was that my situation you were talking about?" I'm like, "Yes, it was. Yes, it was. So anyway, all right, let's move on.
So we got a question here from Bruce. His wife's 82-year-old father passed away about 8 years ago, and the father was taking IRA distributions. A portion of the IRA was inherited. Since then, his wife, Bruce's wife, had been taking RMDs based on her life expectancy as an old stretch IRA. Bruce's wife passed away 1st of October 3 years ago. She was 57 years old after the Secure Act passed. Mm-hmm. Bruce is now 59. He has become a successor beneficiary to this IRA, but he's not found the right guidance on whether he needs to take RMDs in the first 9 years, or simply drain the account within 10 years.
Yeah, this can be tricky because under the old rules, a successor beneficiary would simply step right into the shoes of the person that passed it along. So mom died, dad died, it went to daughter, daughter's married, daughter lists husband as successor or one of the kids' successor, she dies, the kid or the husband could step into the shoes and continue to take RMDs based on the wife's life expectancy. But that did change. The rules for successor beneficiaries are just different. A successor beneficiary is now subject to the 10-year rule. The 10-year rule began at the original date of your wife's death. So in that case, that means you would have to have this thing completely emptied out by 2030. As far as RMDs go, there's a lot of confusion in this area as well. The IRS proposed regulations to require successor beneficiaries to continue to take RMDs if the original beneficiary was already taking them, as like your wife was. However, recent guidance, just recent, has said we're going to excuse these RMDs for 21, 22, and 23. So this year, you don't have to take anything as they're trying to figure out the rules going forward. Now, hopefully they'll clear this up pretty soon. And if they do, we'll try to remember to bring it up to you here on the air. And I know we will, because when these things come, whether it's a 529 plan and how the Roth rollover works, or old inherited IRAs and successor beneficiaries, because you don't want to get caught on this, because if they say next year, yes, you have to start taking RMDs, which personally I don't think they will. I think they're just going to say have it emptied out in 10 years. It's just too confusing, too many trip cords. You know, when they said if you miss an RMD, that you, the penalty is now 25%, not 50%, that tells me they're going to start enforcing that. Back in the 50% day, we never had anybody pay a 50% penalty by missing an RMD. We would simply take the missed RMD, and if the IRS questioned it, we'd send them a letter, we missed it, here's how we fix it, and they always waived it, always waived it. But now, saying, that seems a little, bit over the top, 50%. But 25%, I'm thinking, they're probably going to start nixing people on that. All right, Jimmy, let's take a quick break, come back, and wrap it up. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Hope you enjoyed the program. Hope you have a great Labor Day weekend planned. I'm going to be traveling over the weekend to visit a niece that lives in California, taking my stepdad John with us. It's going to be a nice trip for him. And we'll be back Sunday, so just a quick three-day deal, out, bang, bang, back, which always jacks with you when you have the time change. But, Jim, I know you've been working on getting some guests lined up. Any teasers there?
So we had Ed Slott a couple of weeks back on that. I've spoken with Jerry Sudler, Don't Retire, Rewire. She's been a repeat guest over the years. She's going to be coming on board in a couple of weeks. We have a gentleman whose name escapes me, and I should have brought it with me.
Ryan McCowan?
You got it. He's out of Minneapolis area, but he's part of your Ed Slott group, and he's been a frequent contributor to their online Ed Slott reports and different things, and got a lot of good stuff. And he's actually has his own radio program
there.
So
we're going to maybe reciprocate a little bit. I mean, one of the ways I've learned that you get traction for your podcast and everything else is to cross promote each other. Mm-hmm. So if Ryan comes on and he says, "Hey, you need to start listening to David's podcast," and I say the same thing, and then you might pick up. And that's what happened with David McKnight. So David McKnight with the Power of Zero, a lot of people, I promoted the heck out of that. A lot of people listening right now listen to David McKnight every single week on his podcast. And then guess what? We start reciprocating the other way, and I pick up some of his listeners. And that's how you go from no listeners, which I found out if you have more than something like, it's something ridiculously low, like 50 listeners or more, that you're in the top like 10% of all podcasters.
Right.
And I'm like, wow. You'd have to really want to do it to only have 50 people or even less listening.
Well, I will tell you, we also have our Retirement Planning Today classes coming up at Ivy Tech the first couple of weeks of October. So those are available on Ivy Tech's website. I've got the draft up on the CFCI website as well. That should be up by the end of the week if you're interested in that. Great for people ages 50 to 65-ish or so thinking about retirement.
Maybe 75, 50 to 75 with the new required distribution rules changing 73 and 75. But there's something in it for everybody. But it really heavily gets promoted to people 50 and older.
Yep.
Because the brochure or whatever, the syllabus shows up at my house on my table. So they wasted 50 cents on that one or whatever it costs. So anyway, Jim, have a great weekend.
Thank you, sir.
I know
safe
I'll
travels.
See you here the rest of the week. Everyone listening, have a great weekend. I don't know exactly on my schedule what we're doing next week, but I promise you, we will put together a great show and be here to deliver it. Have a great Labor Day weekend, everyone. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.